ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। The Upanishad, as usual, started with a question by the disciple to the guru. The guru here is Brahmaji, none other than Brahmaji himself, the creator, who is a self-realized master. And the student is a rishi, so he also is a highly evolved student. So his question was, I want to know that by which all my sins will be destroyed. And by sins, he means identification. Complete identification with the body, mind, and intellect will be destroyed, by which I will realize the Param Purusha, the Supreme Purusha, the Supreme Consciousness, the Pure Consciousness. An answer was given, a very brief one. There are three methods of realizing this: faith, devotion, and dhyana or meditation, out of which faith and bhakti, we have already talked about faith. The creator does not go into details about those. Obviously, the reason is that the student has faith, and that's why he has come. If he didn't have faith that there was this Supreme Purusha who will destroy the sins, why would he even ask? Okay. Obviously, it is obvious that he also has devotion. He has love for the subject. That's why he wants to know more. Only when we have love for something, we will go deeper into it. If you don't have, okay, we heard this Purusha, but I don't have, okay, it's fine, then leave it. So the very fact that the student has asked, Brahmaji, the teacher doesn't think that the student needs a discourse on bhakti or on Shraddha, faith. And so primarily this text goes into then meditation. And before going into meditation, the teacher has explained that na karmana na prajaya na dhanena. So not by karmas, not by progeny, not by wealth can this be attained. But the only way of attaining this is by renunciation. And what is to be renounced? There is actually in Vedanta, there is no need to renounce anything physically. But a mental renunciation is extremely essential. The mental attachment that we have to our possessions, me and mine, my house, my kids, my husband, my family, my this, my that, all in the mind, that has to be renounced for this final emancipation. And how is it to be renounced? What is the practice of meditation? That is what then Brahmaji starts with. And so we saw in detail the external conditions that need to be fulfilled for a successful meditation, which was in mantra number 5, Vivikta Deshes Chasukha Sanastaha. So in a solitary place, which is comfortable and stable, okay, indicating no rocking chairs, no sitting at the edge of a cliff, no sitting too close to the river that the water might take you away. Stable and comfortable, clean. Cleanliness, both outside, external circumstances, mind cleanliness, extremely important. Samagriva Shariraha, head, neck, and back in one straight line. I told you the spinal fluid then flows freely. It becomes easy. The body will not ache. If you are slouching, the body will ache. And if there is any pain or ache in the body, the mind is going to be distracted. And that is the reason. Atyashramastha, very important. When I sit on the seat of meditation, I must be a nobody. Because if I am a somebody, if I am a brahmachari, I'm going to think of my studies. If I'm a grahastha, I'm going to think of my family. If I'm a vanaprastha, I'm going to think of something else, of what I did in the grahastha ashram. So I have to be in sannyas. Samyak nyasa. I have to have renounced all those duties temporarily. At our stage, it'll only be temporary. When people really take sannyas and go away and all, that's all they do, because then that's the only thing that remains for them. If we are practicing it, at least for that 30 minutes or whatever, try to detach yourself from all your work worries, family worries, any kind of worries, because that detachment is extremely essential. And then sakalin, all the senses controlled by the mind, and the mind then thinking about the guru. So that pranamya guru. So guru or God, salutations. And then in the cave of your heart, this every single Upanishad says that meditation has to be done in the cave of our own heart. I told you last time when I say I always point myself to the chest. I don't say I did this, I thought this. I don't say like that. I point it to the chest. So the I is here. The Purusha, Angushta Matram Purusham, Kathopanishad says it's the size of a thumb when it's in the spiritual heart. Not the fleshy heart, but the spiritual heart. So that's where this Purusha has to be meditated upon. Okay? So that was the external circumstances. And then the question arises, so how is this Purusha? What exactly do I meditate upon? And therefore now in mantra 6, we read this mantra last time and we did it halfway, I believe. There are 13 pointers that are given to help us, to guide us how to meditate. Or more than how to meditate, what to meditate on. So meditate on that which cannot be thought about. This is the very, very hardest part. Because the reason is all our knowledge in this world, we get through the medium of thought, mind. It is the mind which is giving us the knowledge. We are trying to get knowledge of the Purusha. Now we are being told, don't think. And the reason is because this supreme reality is because of which I can think. We have studied Kenopanishad. In Kenopanishad we saw, it is because of which the mind thinks. That is that Brahman. That is that factor. That is that supreme reality. So if you try to think about Brahman through the mind, you're going to objectify it. The mind can only think of objects. You're going to objectify it. And that is not correct. We saw that in Kenopanishad itself. The student comes and says, I know it very well. And the teacher doesn't accept that answer. So that which is beyond the mind. Okay, so to go beyond the mind, you have to transcend the mind. That is what is meant. Transcend, don't remain at the level of the mind and then start thinking, oh, Brahman is like this, Brahman is like that, maybe, etc., etc. No. Try to transcend the mind. Avyaktam, it is unmanifest. Manifest is that which can be known by the senses. Unmanifest is that which cannot be known by the senses. So it is told that don't use your senses. That means what? Transcend the senses as well. Anantam, limitless. So that tells us it's infinite, because if it was not ananta, if it had a limit, then there is something other than that, because you know when there is a limit, there's something else beyond that limit. So that's why it is said it is limitless. Shivam anantam arupam, there is no form, which means that you cannot know it by your eyes. Because eyes can only see form. If it is formless, the eyes cannot see. So then we might think, oh, but formless, I can see through the mind, right? No, that's why it is said, achintya, it cannot be thought from through the mind as well. Shivam, very auspicious. Why auspicious? There is nothing else other than it. So it's very auspicious. Prashantam, I told you, prashanta, prakarshena shanta, which is beyond shanta and ashanta. There are shanta and ashanta. Peace and restlessness are pairs of opposites. We want to transcend the pairs of opposites. So, it's like I'm carrying a bag on my right shoulder and the right shoulder gets tired and hurts. So I shift the bag on the left shoulder. the right shoulder is now at peace. It is not agitated. But after a little while, the left shoulder is going to start hurting. So we want to go beyond these two, which means that whether there is peace or whether there is restlessness, I remain as the witness principle of both. Okay, I'm at peace today. Fine, no problem. Tomorrow, I'm restless. Okay, my mind is restless today. No problem. So that's how we transit. That is what is meant by Prashanta, is to go beyond and stay as a witness to both. To know that I am the illumining factor for both peace and restlessness. I am not myself peace, neither am I restlessness. That should be known. I think I am peaceful. That is how I say. I am peaceful. I am restless. That is how I say. It is not correct. It is not correct. The mind is peaceful today. The mind is restless today. And I am beyond both these. And I am the witness of both these. Amritam, immortal. There is no birth to this. So there can never be any death. So it is immortal. Brahma Yonim. This is where we were, I think. It is the womb of the creator. So which means that the creator here, Ishvara. Ishvara also has come from that pure consciousness. Now we are going to the Turiya state, okay? So there is, if we have not done chapter 7 in Bhagavad Gita, there Bhagavan will explain. There is this, my lower nature and my higher nature. The lower nature is made up of this world that you see. And my higher nature is Ishvara, who is the creator, who with the help of Maya creates. And beyond both these, I am the pure consciousness, the Turiya state, that what you would call Turiya state, pure consciousness, Brahman, Atman, all that above. So that's why this Brahma Yoni means, Yoni is womb. So the creator, the womb of the creator, that is what it means. I am the womb of the creator, means the creator has come from my womb, means Ishvara also has come from me. So I am beyond Ishvara as well. That's what is meant. The origin, Gurudev has translated, is as origin of Brahmadeva, the creator. Tatha adi madhya anta vihinam ekam. So I do not have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Bhagavan Sri Krishna has said this also in chapter 10. It will come. He says, Arjuna, know me to be the beginning, the middle, and the end. Means what? There is nothing else other than me. Also, beginning and middle and end means in the realm of time. So by saying that either I am only the beginning, the middle, and the end, or I have no beginning, no middle, and no end, it means I'm timeless. I'm beyond time. Because time is a superimposition on the pure consciousness. Time is not real. We have discussed this before. Because time is not real, we have just changed the clocks, right? Spring forward, we just changed the clocks. Then in the fall, we'll just go back. And now they're saying they're going to eliminate that totally. If it was real, you could not have changed it. It's not real. It is false. It is a superimposition. So by saying, know me not to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, means that I am beyond time. So you, because anything that is in the realm of time will end. Whatever has come into being in the realm of time will end in that realm of time. So also earlier on when he said Anantam, I'm not going to end, that also indicates beyond time. Because if it has an end, that means knowledge or pure ends here, and then what is after that? Ignorance. So it cannot be. So that means it's beyond time. Time and space are the most subtle things, and both are superimpositions. They are not real. Space we actually even cannot see. What we see is only light, and we infer space from the fact that I can push my hand. You know, I can extend my hand. That tells me that there is space in front of me. Otherwise, actually, I don't see space. I see light. That's why in a pitch dark room, I cannot see anything. I don't see light. I don't know whether there is space or not. So space and time, they are super. They are like you know, when you have a graph in geometry, so there is an x-axis and a y-axis. So one is space, one is time. That's what it is. And when you remove these two, what remains is pure consciousness. So I am beyond time. I'm beyond space. In the hierarchy of creation in Tattva Bodh, we also saw that space came first from the elements. It is the most subtlest of the elements. And space had to be created first, because otherwise, where would the other elements have space to be in? Like if there was no space and then air came, then where will air be held? Therefore, space had to come first, and space will merge last also. When the dissolution, space will be the last one to go. Nevertheless, it is not Brahman. Brahman, pure consciousness, is beyond space. Okay? Vihinam ekam. Ekam, only one. That's why Kaivalya Upanishad. It is only one. And I need to reach that one. Vibhum. Vibhum, all pervading. So, like space, it is all pervading. But our Acharya also used to say to us in Sandipani, he says, you should imagine, because only we can do imagination only, otherwise what, we don't know. Imagine Brahman without space. See, when you think of anything, you just presume that space is already there. If I tell you my address, that space, I don't have to say it. There is a space, and in that space, my house is. It is there. It is already presumed. So now, and we are all used to that, anything plus space. So now we need to start thinking something without space. It's not possible. It's very difficult. So you try and imagine something, but don't imagine the space part of it. Very difficult. So, Vibhum, all pervading. It is in and through the creation. It is in a cloth where we have a vertical thread and a horizontal thread. Both vertical and horizontal is the pure consciousness. That's why in and through the creation. Chidananda Rupam Adbhutam. So Chidananda Rupam, Chit, knowledge, of the nature of knowledge. This is also, understand, is our own experience, because I, as a person, I have knowledge of myself and others. So I'm sentient, right? Chit, Chidananda. So I am of the nature of knowledge, and I'm also of the nature of bliss. Why? Because I'm Ananta. All these descriptions that have been given, it will help in the seat of meditation. If we stop saying there is Brahman, which is Anant, there is Brahman, which is Arupam, there is Brahman, which is... So what you should do is you should say, I am Anant. I am formless. I assert it upon yourself. All these descriptions, I am without beginning, middle and end. I am all pervading. I am auspicious. I am pure. I am the only one. So that is the way that this meditation can happen. If you keep on saying Brahman is like this, Brahman, then you're constantly objectifying. And that is not that, and then it is through the mind. Objectification happens only through the mind. It can happen only through the mind. That means you're involving the mind. Now we want to go beyond the mind. So if you want to go beyond the mind, that is the only way. I am infinite. Because right now what I think, I'm finite. I'm just sitting here. I'm only in Vancouver. I'm only in this room. No, I'm infinite. I'm here. I'm in all of Canada, all of world, all of the universe, all of the solar systems. I am everywhere. So it's that I has to be brought in. The mind, Patanjali, in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which is entirely a treatise on meditation, his yoga, he says that the mind has got five states. The first state is kshipta bhumi. He calls this as bhumis. They're bhumis. They're states. One is kshipta. Kshipta means extreme rajas. So it's a very agitated state of mind. Next is mudha. Mudha is tamas. So sleep. The mind will go to sleep. Next is vikshipta. Vikshipta means in normal Hindi or normal Marathi, it means strange or queer. But here it doesn't mean strange. Vikshipta here means there is rajas, but also there is sattva. In kshipta, the mind is only rajasic. So it's very agitated. It's very restless. In mudha, it is going to sleep. It is tamas. In vikshipta, the rajas is there, but there is a little bit of sattva, because of which what happens is when the mind is in vikshipta bhumi, there will be times when it can concentrate. But because of the sattva, presence of sattva, it can concentrate in certain moments, but it'll run. It'll run quite often. In kshipta, it'll be constantly running, constantly wandering. And that type of a bhumi, that type of a mind, is not good for meditation. That's why when our mind is very restless, like one gentleman was saying to me on Saturday, he said, it was a time when I was chasing dreams. He had come to my home and he said, it was a time when I was chasing dreams. And my older cousin who was into yoga, he said, stop running, he said. And he says, today I understand what he meant that time. Don't chase dreams. But he said, I was young. I didn't know any better. So when the mind is in that sort of a state, which is kshipta, it is not mudha because it is not sleeping. It is very active. It is very dynamic. It wants to achieve. It wants to get. It cannot meditate. Mudha, you're going to sleep. It cannot meditate. Vikshipta also, because there is little sattva. Vikshipta comes when you have chased the dreams and you come to a stage, the mind matures to a stage where the mind starts thinking, you know, I've been chasing, I've been running, what did I get? When that thought comes, it is now entering the vikshipta bhumi. And in vikshipta, there is sattva. So you can start your practice of meditation. I wouldn't say start meditation. The practice has to be started. I already told you before, yama, niyama, asana, I told you, right? So asana has to be perfected. Even before that, yama and the don'ts and do's have to be followed in our day-to-day life. Then we will perfect asana and then we practice meditation. And it's okay if the mind runs. If there will be occasional concentration and most of the times the mind will run. But these three bhumis, the mind is not fit for meditation. In kshipta, mudha and vikshipta. Next comes ekagra. Now ekagra has got a predominance of sattva. And because ekagra has got a predominance of sattva, that is the bhumi which is now, which will now help in meditation. Where there is a lot of sattva because of, means what? Means a lot of purity of mind has come. Means what? Means there are not that many likes and dislikes. Means what? There will not be that much agitation. There will not be that much restlessness. There will not be that much sleep. And in that state of mind, in that bhumi, the mind can concentrate on these aspects. I am arupa. I am. And when the mind is in a sattvic frame, the understanding also will be much better. The understanding of these words will be much better. So ekagra. And next is niruddha. Niruddha means where it is now completely, it is... There is absolutely no rajas and tamas. There is absolutely no impurity. And it can be withdrawn at will. So the practice, ekagra bhumi, when you practice, you will reach niruddha. And after niruddha, it is then totally, these are the five states. So there's kshipta, restless, mudha, tamas, vikshipta, rajas, mixed with sattva, ekagra, predominance of sattva, niruddha, completely withdrawn. Okay? In ekagra and niruddha only you can truly meditate. Mudha, forget it. Kshipta, forget it. Vikshipta, trying can be done. You can try. Okay? The mind will run. Now, in ekagra also, there are four types of ekagra. See, ekagra is single-pointedness of mind where there is a lot of sattva. Now, this frame of mind can be used to concentrate on something outside. Okay? And the first example that comes to my mind is a research scientist. You know, when scientists are doing research on anything in a lab, they are fully concentrated. even at work, sometimes, you know, if you're working on a project or something, we also are fully concentrated. But it is on the external object. So that ekagra doesn't help in Vedantic meditation because you're concentrating on something external. The next ekagra, single-pointedness, is on our thoughts. So it's subtle. The ekagra outside is gross. And you can concentrate on the thoughts. So, you know, when I'm thinking, how should I do this project? So I'm not doing anything external, but only concentrating inside. So that is subtle. So it's a bit more difficult. The third ekagra is on the ananda aspect of this satchitananda. So the bliss aspect. Now, what it means is, means I experience that bliss, and that bliss could come from an external object or it could come from within. So, you know, I can have, I just read, or yesterday, last night, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. He says that his guru resurrected. So his guru passed on, attained Mahasamadhi, but he came back and he gave darshan to Yogananda. And when he wrote it, of course, this divine revelation had already happened. And afterwards, he's writing his autobiography. He says that when even I recollect that moment when my guru came in front of me and I hugged him, I go into divine bliss. That is that ekagra. So inside, you know, nothing is happening outside at this moment, but I think of something that has happened in the past and it gives me great joy. We have that. How happy I felt when I had my first child or whatever like that, right? In this case, it's demise. I don't think any material circumstance that has given us happiness can compare to that. I read it was amazing. He's giving this description of Sri Yukteswar, who's standing in front of him, and he says, even today, when I think of that, I go into divine ecstasy. That is this ekagra. Okay, so he becomes, immediately the mind is now only enjoying that bliss, which he actually experienced way back in the past. But even in the present moment, he can get that same experience. And it's only in the mind. Or then there could be bliss. So that is the bliss aspect. And the final ekagra is on the self. So that is also going beyond the bliss aspect. Because that bliss is because of. He recollects the vision of the guru and he's in bliss. But when you go beyond, you're in bliss. Whether you recollect something or you don't recollect something, you're always in bliss. And that is the final ekagra that we have to achieve, which is the single-pointedness to only Brahman, to pure consciousness. Okay, in meditation, this is how you go. Yama, Nema, and the Ashtanga yoga that he has given. So asana, then pranayama, so you control the breath. Then pratyahara, you withdraw the senses. That is what is meant. That is what is meant by saying achintyam, withdraw the mind. Arupam, withdraw the senses. So you withdraw the senses, you withdraw the mind, and then you stay on that one thought. It is also a thought, aham brahmasmi. You stay on that thought, and when you're in ekagra bhumi, it will be easy to stay on that thought. So when you're in kshipta and mudha, not possible, impossible. Mudha, you're going to go to sleep. So what thought? You'll think, and then next moment you'll fall asleep. Vikshipta, you'll think aham brahmasmi. Next thing, your mind will be somewhere else. So it's not possible. In Vikshipta, little bit Ambrahmasmi, maybe five times Ambrahmasmi, and then, oh, I have to do this like that. So it's, that is also not that good. Ekagra, 10, 15, 20, maybe 5, 10, more time on that single thought. And then the mind is running, and then immediately you bring it back. See, I will tell you, this is my own experience. The mind runs, and sometimes I'm not even aware that the mind has run away. You're not even aware. And suddenly you're like, wait a minute. I was here and now my mind is somewhere else. So even that awareness will be sharper in ekagra bhumi. The minute it runs, you will become aware of it. You'll bring it back. Bring it back from wherever it has run. Bring it back. Bring it back into aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. and then it will get withdrawn. And then that becomes Savikalpa Samadhi, and then after that there will be Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Okay, so this is the meditation on the formless. Now, Shruti, the guru realizes, or Shruti realizes, that not everybody can do this meditation on the formless. It is extremely difficult. When we see chapter 12 of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjun asks, what should I do? Should I do Saguna Bhakti or should I do Nirguna Bhakti? And Bhagwan says, both of these paths will lead to me, but what are you capable of? Are you capable of Nirguna Bhakti? Because that is very, very difficult. That's why I say you do Saguna Bhakti. Okay? Because meditating on a form is much easier than meditating on the formless. It's easy. Of course, for some people who are highly advanced, meditation on formless will be easy. They'll be able to do it. But for most of us, it is better to meditate on the form, and then from the form you go to the formless. So recognizing this, the guru now gives another mantra, which is a meditation on form. So previous mantra 6 was formless. Mantra 7 is on a form. And here he's used the form of Parmeshwar, Ishwara, Bhagwan Shiva and Parvati. But we can substitute it with anything, any deity that we want. So whatever is my, it is better to meditate on the Ishta Devata than just because the book is saying Shiva. Now let me meditate. It's not like that. And the reason is why in the second mantra only, Bhagwan said bhakti is required. So that form which I love, you meditate on that form because you will stay with that form because you have love for that form. You know, if I think about my child or my grandchild, then I can think more about my grandchild than I can ever think about of any other grandchild because that form is dear to me. So same, says the same idea. But don't think that because you're Uma and Parmeshwar have been used, we have to do this. You do whatever is your Ishta Devata. Uma Sahayam Parameshwaram Prabhum Trilochanam Neelakantham Prakshantam Dhyatva Munirgachati Bhutayonim Samasta Sakshim Tamasaparastat. By meditating upon Lord Parmeshwara, consorted by Mother Uma, the highest Lord, the all-powerful, the three-eyed, the blue-necked, and the ever-tranquil, a true man of reflection reaches him who is the source of all the manifested world, the witness of all, and who is beyond all darkness. So this is a meditation, like I said, on Saguna, Saguna Rupa. So there is a rupa, there is a form. It is not a rupam. Now it is not a chintyam. Why? Because now you're going to think through the mind. So that is also okay. It's a lower form of meditation, but it's okay. It's not actually even lower or higher that we can say. It is what am I qualified for? What is the point in trying to do something where I have no qualification and I'm going to fail completely? Rather than that, you start at a step where I have some chance of success. So I think I have a form. See, Raman Maharshi in his Saddarshanam, somebody came to Raman Maharshi and asked, does God have a form or is he formless? And Raman Maharshi asked him the question, do you think you have a form or do you think you're formless? So if I think I have a form, then it's always easy to meditate on a form. If I can think of myself as formless, it'll be easy to meditate upon the formless. That's why I said in the previous mantra, I am formless. Now suddenly to think, because you see, I'm so rooted in this form, 5'4" female form, that suddenly to think I am this is difficult. So unless I get this thought that I am this form out of my mind, then I am formless will not become easy. So that is the whole idea. So what are you capable of? What are you qualified to do? So this is Uma Sahayam Parameshwaram Prabhum. So now imagine the Lord Shiva with his consort Parvati. Okay. Prabhum, the Lord of the entire universe. Like I said, this can be Radha and Krishna. It can be Vishnu and Lakshmi. It can be Brahmaji and Saraswati also. No problem. That's not a problem. Trilochanam, Neelakantham, Prashantam. These are the adjectives to Parmeshwaram. Trilochanam, the three-eyed one. The three eyes should not be taken as a biological freak where there is an eye over here. The three eyes are, one eye is of love, one is justice, and one is wisdom. Okay, that's the Vedantic significance of the three eyes. The idea is that if we have only love for somebody, there will not be perfect justice done. And we see that in the case of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhan. That love, of course, we even cannot call it as love. It is attachment. So when he had only love, attachment only to his son, he was unjust to the Pandavas. To his brother's children, he became very unjust. So when there is only love, there's a story. I think I must have told you this before. It's a real story. It happened in England. There was a man who was being hung. And he was asked his last wish, and he asked to see his mother. And when his mother came, he slapped her across the face. And she said, "Why are you doing this?" So he said, "When I was small and when I stole my first loaf of bread, you should have slapped me. If you had slapped me at that time, I wouldn't have been going to the gallows today." Right? But that was love. So what she said, "Oh, my baby, he can do anything," right? That's why as parents, we need to have love, but we also need to have justice. And that is the significance of the two eyes. Now, only love is not good. There has to be justice along with that love. Okay, suppose if there is only justice, no love, then we'll become very harsh. So Bhagwan has got both love and justice. And then he uses the third eye, which is the third eye of wisdom, to dish out correct justice. That is what we all need. The third eye is supposed to be the eye of intuition. It's not a physical eye, but it's the eye of intuition. It is the eye of the intellect, you can say. It is the eye which tells me, I means E-Y-E, huh? It is the eye which tells me that the sky is not there, even though I see that the blue sky, the sky is, that is the intuition. Okay, intellect, eye of the intellect. Either it is intuition or thinking. It is that eye which tells me that the reason that I can even walk on this earth is because there is a gravitational pull under the earth, which I don't see, but it is there. So that is that eye of wisdom. So Trilochanam, three-eyed Lord, love, justice, wisdom. If you were to meditate on the Virat Rupa of Lord, people do that. They, you know, the Virat Rupa that Bhagwan shows in chapter 11 or the universal person, Purusha Suktam that we have, then the three eyes become the moon, sun, and the planets, stars or planets. That way you will see the three eyes. Okay. Or they're this thing. So a description is being given because when you meditate now, you meditate on that form. Beautiful Shiva is sitting. Beautiful Umaji is sitting next to him. He has the three eyes. One is of love. One is of wisdom. And the idea is that not just that he has, I can do whatever. No. That is not the idea. He has, so I must also do that same thing. I also must have an eye of love. I also must have an eye of wisdom. And I also must have that eye of justice. So not only that he has, but I should be like that too. Trilochanam, Neelakantham. We know the story that when the Devas and Asuras did the Sagar Manthan, when they churned the milky ocean, what came out first was poison. And of course, nobody wanted, the Devas also didn't want the poison. The Asuras also didn't want the poison. So Bhagwan Shiva in his kindness, because he's a Bholenath, is very kind. He said, "I will take it." There is also a story associated with this. It seems that at that time, Parvatiji said to Bhagwan Shiva that, "You don't worry, you take that poison. My Mangalsutra is so strong that nothing will happen to you." That's why in weddings, Parvatiji is worshipped. In Hindu weddings, the Mangalsutra is... blessings are taken from Parvatiji. It is because of this. She says that my Mangalsutra is so strong. All of you understand Mangalsutra, the black beaded necklace that most of the Indian cultures will wear after marriage. has said that it's my power that will keep you alive. You swallow the poison. And then he swallowed it, but he held it in his throat. So what the reason is that if he would have spat it out, then all the beings outside would have been destroyed. If he would have swallowed it inside, all the beings inside. What are the beings? We have a lot of bacteria. We have a lot of insects. Everything are living off of us, right? Inside. So they would have been killed. So he could not spit it out. Neither could he swallow it completely. So he held it in his throat. And that's why he got the name Neelakanta. His throat became blue. The significance of this for us, now we might think also was the big deal for us. No, what it is, see, when we hear something negative about somebody, we must not spit it out. Means what? Immediately at something, call 10 people, you know, this is what has happened. We must not spit it out. We must not take it inside completely either. What does it mean by taking that negative, whatever, somebody says something bad about somebody? If I take it in, then my behavior towards that person will be influenced by what I have heard. And not taking it in means that whatever negative thing that I have heard must not influence my behavior towards that person, because I've heard it from a third person. It should be my own experience. That is a different matter. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the sadhu is described as one who is same towards a friend and towards an enemy. Even a person who is trying to really hurt him, he will be same towards that person. So this Neelakanta, this significance of holding the poison in the throat is, if we hear something negative, if we hear something poisonous about somebody, we must also hold it only in our throat. We must not give it out to other people. We must not tell other people. We must not let our influence, our behavior be influenced by what we have heard. That is the significance of this Neelakanta, okay, poison. And that's why we see Shiva, Gangaji started flowing because he was burning. It was poison, halahal. And there was a lot of, burning sensation. So Gangaji started flowing from his hair, and the moon came and sat. And that's the significance of the moon and Gangaji flowing from his, to cool him down. And that's the reason also that constant milk and water is done, Abhishek, on the Shivlingas. We don't see that milk Abhishek for Vishnu or Krishna or anybody, right? It's only for Shiva. And that is what, to keep him cool constantly. So Neelakantam Prashantam, again, Prashanta word has come. He is beyond peace and restlessness, beyond Shanti and Ashanti. He is extremely peaceful. The reason we meditate on all these, we try to inculcate those values within us. So I also try to be peaceful at all times. I also try to be like Neelakanta, like hold or any kind of negative things in my throat without, you know. I also have to have the eye of love, the justice and the wisdom. So all that. Dhyatva munir gachati yonim. So a true man, dhyatva, having meditated upon, dhyatva, there's a word in Sanskrit grammar for that. Having meditated on that form, munihi, muni, mananashila muni. Muni, the word is mananashila, means one who is contemplative. You know, muni. Muni word comes in Bhagavad Gita also. The one who is contemplative. Gachati bhuta yonim. So he goes, he reaches the source, bhuta yoni. Yoni again, womb. We saw that Brahma yoni over there, right? So yoni means womb only. So bhuta of beings. He reaches the source of the beings. So who is the source? Ishvara. Right? He's meditating on form, he will reach Ishvara. Samasta sakshim tamasa parastat. So he goes beyond ignorance and he reaches that witness principle. Now, why is it said here witness principle? Witness principle was not said in the earlier mantra. Because when you meditate on the formless, which is the substratum, when we are going to the substratum, there is nothing to witness anymore. You understand? Witness word comes if there is somebody else. If I was sitting alone in this room, there is nothing to witness. Now that you are all there, I am witnessing you and you are witnessing me. But if I walk out or all of you go away, there is nothing to witness. So the six, mantra six, because it is meditation on the substratum, on the formless, there is nothing, no witness. Here, it is a duality is being maintained. I am here and Lord Shiva is there and I am meditating on this form. So that's why he reaches the Sakshi, the witness principle. The witness principle is a step between the ego and the pure consciousness. When we reach the stage of pure consciousness, there is nothing to be witnessed. And therefore the word Sakshi does not apply to pure consciousness anymore. But when something is being witnessed, that pure consciousness comes down a notch and becomes the Sakshi Chaitanya, it is called. So it comes down a notch. Why? Because now there is a duality that is being witnessed, which is in Savikalpa Samadhi. That is what it is. That who is the one that is witnessing the thought, Aham Brahmasmi? I am Brahman is being maintained, but the meditator is aware of that thought. If I'm meditating and there's a single pointed flow of thought, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. The one that is witnessing this Aham Brahmasmi thought is Sakshi Chaitanya. There it is, Sakshi Chaitanya. When this Brahmasmi goes away, only Aham remains. Aham, which is Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Aham, there is no Sakshi Chaitanya. It is Chaitanya itself. That is what it is. That's why this word Samasta Sakshim, this person who is now witnessing the form of the Lord in his mind, okay, and contemplating on that form will reach that Sakshi Chaitanya a little notch below. Because in the ultimate analysis, the form has to be destroyed. We see that in the life of Ramakrishna Paramahansa, where the minute he closed his eyes, the form of the Divine Mother came to him. And then the Divine Mother spoke with him. And then he spoke with the Divine Mother. And then one day his guru came along, Totapurli, and told him that you need to go beyond the form. And Bhagwan Ramakrishna Paramahansa. Did I say Raman Maharshi earlier on? No, Ramakrishna Paramahansa. I said Ramakrishna, okay. Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Totapuri, his guru, came to him, and Ramakrishna Paramahansa was very childlike. So he ran to his divine mother. He said, Mother, this person has come and he's telling me to go beyond your form. What should I do? She said, I have sent him. You go back to him and do whatever he's telling you to do. And he said, you need to sit with a knife in meditation. Because Ramakrishna Paramahansa said, I cannot meditate only. I close my eyes and the divine mother comes in front of me. What should I do? How do I go beyond form? He says, you kill the form. And that's what he did. And then he enjoyed that bliss. Because that bliss of oneness cannot be enjoyed when you are meditating on the form. But then what happens is, when your meditation reaches a certain amount of maturity, that form itself will give you that experience like this. Some guru will come and they will say, okay, now you have to go beyond form. This is how the Lord does it for the devotees. Because the devotees are always meditating on form. They always maintain the duality and they meditate on any form. Rama, Krishna, whatever. So this remain as a witness. This is what is happening. We are remaining as a witness of that form. Earlier on, we are not remaining as a witness of the formless, because formless, how can you witness formless? So you meditate on, I am only formless. I am all this. I am. So there's no duality at all. There's nobody else. Me only. I am formless. I am Prashantam. I am whatever, no beginning, no middle end, no end, all that I am. But here it is, I am there and my Ishta Devata is there and I'm meditating on the Ishta Devata. So that Sakshi Bhava is there, witness principle. Okay? And who is beyond all darkness? Tamasa Parastat means it's knowledge as well. All right. In the Viratya, the three eyes are sun, moon, and agni, fire. Okay? All right. Now, first it was formless, then it was form. Now we go to both. Combination of form and formless. And this is mantra 8. Sa Brahma, Sa Shiva, Sendra, Soksharaf, Paramaswarat, Sa Evam Vishnu, Sa Pranaha, Sa Kalogni, Sa Chandramaha, Saha. Saha, the Visarga goes because of Sandhi. Sa Brahma, so he is Brahma. Saha is he. He is Brahma, he is Shiva. So when it said he is Shiva, it's on the form. Because there is a me and then there is a he, me and somebody else. So he is Brahma, he is Shiva, he is Indra, he is the immutable, the supreme, the self-luminous. That is going into formless now. He alone is Vishnu, he is Prana, he is time and fire, he is the moon. So this meditation is on the form, to form and formless both, to indicate that there is no difference between form and formless. One. So when we do Upasana, and we saw this in Keno Upanishad also, where the guru tells the student that what you think is Brahman, this idea, is not Brahman, it's this. So first, that doesn't mean that the guru, that the teacher is telling not to worship the idol, okay? We need that idol worship. But we need to understand that there is an ideal behind this idol. The idol is not the only thing. When that happens, when I think that this idol is the only thing and there's nothing else, that leads to fanaticism. And that's why we have Vaishnavites and Shaivites fighting with each other, right? So that is, and in chapter 9, Bhagwan Shri Krishna says, people worship me ekatvena and prathaktvena. So knowing me ekatvena means as one. They worship me knowing me as one with them. So with form, we can never become one with anybody. As long as I'm meditating on any form, I cannot be that form. I cannot be that. So only when I go to the substratum, to the essence, then I am one with everybody. So ekatvena, some people worship me, Bhagavan Krishna says, knowing that them, they and me are one and the same. So ekatvena. And some people worship me prathaktvena, means as somebody else. Different. So in that different, there are two categories. One, I think that this deity is different from me. That is one thing. But then I also am thinking that this deity is different from the other deity. So Rama is different from Krishna. Krishna is different from Shiva. Shiva is different from Vishnu. So that is prathaktvena. Okay. Though in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan says, I accept both. Because ultimately, I know that I am all one. He may not know. I know that I'm one. But if you have that understanding, it is better. So as spiritual seekers, we must have that understanding that none of the deities is inferior or superior to anybody. Whichever deity that I like, I can meditate on. But don't think that that deity is superior. Don't have that feeling. You can worship anybody. So that's why this verse is given, that he is only Brahma and he is only Shiva. There's no difference between Brahma, Shiva, Indra. If you think Indra is a deity, he's only God of the heavens. But as substratum, see, in Manisha Panchakam, Bhagavan Shankaracharya has said that from Brahmaji to a blade of grass, it's the same existence principle. From Brahmaji, starting from Brahmaji, who is the highest of Brahma Loka, and then insignificant blade of grass or an insignificant ant, right? A unicellular organ. The existence principle in all of them is the same. So this is what is meant here. If it is Brahma, if it is Shiva, it is Indra, like I told you, Indra is king of the heavens. Nothing special. No, as form, he's not special. But in essence, he's Satchitananda as well. That is what it is. Saha Aksharaha. So this is Akshara, imperishable, formless. Because if there is a form, it will perish. It has to perish. Even Indra, there is a rain. Brahmaji also has a period. He has a period of, there is a period. He is 100 years or 1000 years, something like that. He has. But of course, his one day and night is our like 1000 yugas, or you know, it's a eight, chapter 8 will have all that calculation. So, but doesn't matter. But he lives, his span is 100 years, but his one year is like 1000 times 4 yugas. All 4 yugas, 1000 times 4 yugas is his one day or one night or some such thing, right? So the span is very, very high. Nevertheless, it has an end. Nevertheless, please remember that it has an end. Indra's reign has an end. Everybody's reign has an end. And so if you want to go to something which is endless, Ananta, they are not Ananta. Indra, Brahmaji, these are not Ananta. So if you want to go to that Ananta, then you have to transcend them. So to go through form, you have to understand that all the forms are one. That understanding has to be there first. Indra, Akshara, it is imperishable, no birth. Formless can never die. Form will die always, but the formless will never die. Parama, supreme. So supreme means a point of no return. Means there is nothing higher than that. That is what it is. So that's why Akshara, Parama, and Swarat, self-illumining. Swarat is self-illumining. Independent. Self-illumining means independent. And what is meant by independent, even in our case, the minute I wake up from my sleep, deep sleep, see, I might, if I'm traveling, this has happened to me, I get up and I'm like, okay, where am I? That question comes to me. Because every night I'm in a different hotel or something. Oh God, where am I today? But who am I never comes. Think about your own experience. Who am I? This question never comes. That indicates to us our independence, Swarata. I illumine myself no matter where I am, in what conditions I am. From deep sleep also, somebody just suddenly wakes me up. If they ask me, where are you? I may not be able to answer suddenly. I may think, oh, where am I? What is going on? But if they ask me, who am I? Immediately is going to come, I'm Jaya. There's no way that I'm going to say, who am I? I'm not going to say that. That tells us our independence. The other thing that tells us that we are independent is when we enter a pitch dark room. So I may not be able to see anything that is around in the room. I may not even be able to see, if I hold my hand in front of me, I may not be able to see that hand. But nobody has to tell me that I myself am present in that room. I don't need a light. Am I here? I don't have to ask that question. I know I am in that dark room. I am aware of the darkness outside. I am aware of the light inside within me. And that is what tells me that I am beyond light and darkness. I am the one that is illumining light and darkness at the same time. Because if light and darkness are pairs of opposites, all the pairs. That's why I'm the one that is illumining all the pairs of opposites, joy and sorrow. I'm the witness of both of them. I think that I am the one that is happy. No, I am not happy. I am witnessing the happy thought. I am witnessing the sad thought. I am witnessing light. I'm witnessing darkness. And I can do both at the same time. I know that I know X number of subjects. And at the same time, I know that I don't know these other subjects. So knowledge and ignorance, both I illumine. Light and darkness, both I illumine. At the same time, that is my independence. That is my nature as Swarat. So Akshara, imperishable, as that self-illumining independent entity, I am Akshara. The Akshara is to decay. Akshara, there is no decay. There is decay to the body, there is decay to the mind, intellect, everything, but not to me. Not to me. So Eva Vishnu, this same Vishnu also is same only. The pranas, same. Everything is coming from him. Kalaha, time. This is what I talked about earlier on. Is Kala. Kala, time is a superimposition on the pure consciousness. It is not real. It has started. That's why the unit of time, that's what Gurudev has said. The unit of time is called a second, because there was no first time. Because time is an interval between two events. It is an interval between two thoughts. It can be an interval, and space is an interval between two spots. Therefore, when there is a straight line, there can be a beginning and an end. And that's why we say creation is a circle. There is no beginning. In a circle, you don't know where is the beginning and where is the end. So creation is like this. The yugas come and then back again to the first yuga, and then the four yugas and back again. So creation, therefore, we cannot ask when did creation start. There is no, that question is incorrect. So telling us that he is beyond time. He's Agni and he's Chandrama also. So in chapter 15, Bhagwan has said, I am the light in the sun and the moon, right? Moon, we know moon is reflected light of the sun, but where is the sun getting the light from? the light in the sun is because of the pure consciousness. That is what is meant when we chant the verse, Natatra Suryo Bhati Na Chandra Tarakam, Nema Vidyuto Bhati Kutoya Magnihi, Tameva Bhanta Manubhati Sarvam, Tasya Bhasa Sarvamidam Vibhati. So Natatra Surya Bhati, Natatra, Natatra means referring to the pure consciousness, to the supreme reality. There are five sources of illumination, five sources of light, natural light. Huh? So Natatra Surya, so Surya is the first one, Chandra, Taraka, stars, Agni, four, and lightning, Vidyuta. So there are five sources of natural light. Of course, we don't count the bulbs and all that. So what is being said in that mantra, which appears in the Kathopanishad, that there these five sources of light, they are illumining the entire world, but the supreme consciousness they cannot illumine. Why? Because the light in them is because of the supreme consciousness. The light in the flashlight is because of the batteries. Therefore, the flashlight can illumine the entire room, but it can never illumine the batteries. Na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. So when I see, and na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam, nema vidyuto bhanti kutoya magnihi. So where is that agni or vidyut which will shine you, which will throw light on you? You are the light in them, in all these five sources. So that's why when we receive Swamiji in our house, we say that, na tatra suryo bhati, right? That's the verse we say. So the idea is, think about it. See, the sun is illumining the entire world, right? Now, who gives validity to the sun? I do. I look at the sun and I say the sun is shining, which means what? The sun is dependent on me as the supreme consciousness to illuminate. That is what is meant. That is why it is said that Kalo Agni Sa Chandra, he is only Chandrama, means that light. And Chandrama, when it said Chandrama, Surya, everything included in this Chandrama word. Okay, Vidyut, lightning, Agni, Agni is already said. So the heat and the light in Agni is the pure consciousness. Agni itself is not pure consciousness. The heat and light is given. How? Because I am the one that is illumining that Agni. If there is a fire, there has to be a witness. Otherwise, if there is nobody to witness that fire, if there is nobody to witness that sun has no validity. The validity has to be given by a... I'm sitting in the room. I have to say that there is nothing between the computer and the wall. If I, as a conscious being, is not in this room, that space has got no validity. There's nobody to validate that thing. So to validate anything, pure consciousness is required. And that's why everything in this world is dependent on the pure consciousness. All right. This is what is meant here. So indicating the oneness between all the forms, and the oneness can only be when you go to their essence. There can never ever be oneness in the form. Brahma can never be like Shiva. Shiva can never be like Indra, like Vishnu, like this, that, etc. But when you go to that substratum, then that substratum becomes Akshara, undecaying, supreme, point of no return, self-illumining, independent. When you think of these, you have to compare your own experience with them. You will come to know that this is a description of me only. There cannot be a description of somebody else. It is me, myself. This is meditation. Okay, so we're going to stop here today. Are there any questions? We will continue next time with 9.
Jayaji.
Yes.
A question on this last verse.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned about time. The Kalaha. But we say that pure consciousness is timeless, beyond time.
Yeah.
So I did not understand that.
Yeah. He is time, means time is dependent on him.
Okay.
Time is, okay. That is how it is to be understood. He is time, means that's what I said. He is neither time nor space. He is neither Brahma nor Vishnu. Okay. Mm-hmm. in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 7, Bhagavan will say, they are in me, I am not in them. Mm. Right? That is what. What does that mean? They are dependent on me, I am not dependent on them. It's like the computer. The computer is dependent on electricity. Electricity is not dependent on the computer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. That is how it is to be understood. Okay. Time is dependent on him. He is not dependent on time.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? So next Monday we will meet.
One more question.
Yeah.
More question. When we were talking about the bliss coming from external and internal, my understanding is that all that the happiness that we get from external is never, it's not bliss. It's just happiness, it's transient.
Yeah, bliss, yeah, no. We use the word bliss and happiness means there is, see, we say the happiness came from external object. Very honestly speaking, there is actually that happiness is not coming from external object at all.
Mm,
that is to be understood. That happiness is coming only from the substratum within. And that's why we say the bliss. Because whatever comes from within, we don't know that. I get a cup of coffee and then I feel happy. And I say that cup of coffee gave me that happiness. But actually what has happened is, because my mind was agitated, because I'm addicted to that coffee, when I drank that coffee, the mind's agitation subsided and the bliss which is already present within me came up. And that's why we say bliss from outside object means actually bliss is from inside only. There is no bliss, there is no happiness only from outside objects, honestly speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that happiness was there, it must give happiness to everybody, and our experience said that it doesn't. The same object doesn't give us happiness when my mind is disturbed. Think about it, right? And that's the whole thing of spirituality, is to realize that my happiness is not dependent on that. I am independently joyous. I am independently happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm independent. Yeah. That's the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
That's why we say bliss from outside, because it's not from outside. We just say it. We think it. Mm-hmm. We think it also. We are very conformed. I saw the movie, so I feel very happy. I ate this, therefore I feel happy. I drank that, that's why I feel happy. But no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Any other questions?
Jayaji.
Yes.
I had one question, but it's not related to what we are studying right now.
Okay.
We were doing this Guru Shishya Parampara from the book of hymns yesterday, and the last verse in this Guru Shishya Parampara was Achatur Vardhano Brahma Dvibahu Raparo Harihi Abhal Lochana Shambhu Bhagavan Badarayana.
So
we were just wondering, what is the meaning of this one? Like, we are trying to figure out the meaning of this.
Okay. Can you scan it and send it to me?
Yeah.
Badarayana is one of the gurus. But send it to me. I'll have to look at it.
Okay.
And think about it. Is it in a book?
It's in a book of hymns.
Oh, it's in the book of hymns. Okay, then just send. What is the page number? Tell me. I've got the book of hymns.
It's 11.
Page 11?
Yeah.
Page 11? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll write it down. Okay, and I'll take a look at it. Page 11, you're saying, is it, there is a verse number?
In the Sanskrit version is the last two lines.
Last verse. Okay, it's on page 11 now.
Yeah, Guru Shishya Parampara.
Guru Shishya Parampara. Okay, I'll take a look at it and I will answer it next Monday.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Anything else? All right, we close now. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Okay, bye all.